Shai, when did you feel ready to take the jump into the podcast?
I think after our success with our lunchtime chats, I believe in just kind of the basic economic principle that if there is a demand, the supply will follow. And there began to be a demand of the conversations between you and I. And you came to me one day and you said, I met this amazing producer. I filmed in the studio in Boston. He said he's willing to do our podcast. Let's make it a go. And I said, well, it's go time. One thing about me, I love adventure.
Same. I think for me, it was both and. When I saw the demand and I saw the vision.
Tell us more about the vision.
That I knew that there was something there, but I didn't, you know, this was, I had not been in anywhere, anything near adjacent to media. And I knew that we had been talking about this for a long time, but it just never felt right. We never could see what it actually would be.
Right.
And we both have very high expectations of ourselves and each other. And once I knew that we would be doing something with the guidance of someone who had a lot of skill and would keep that skill and create something of high quality, I was ready.
And talking about your passion and seeing it through, let me just say this. I have found that at times I dream too small. Because when we first started talking about this, I thought the podcast was going to be audio only. And I thought myself or someone I knew was going to edit it. And Margo said, no, bitch. We going big or we going home.
So that's something about me that I don't know where it came from. But if I'm going to do something, I'm going to do it big.
Yeah, absolutely. It's like an all or nothing
mentality. I don't have to ask anything.
There's no middle with you. Like if you're on the bone broth, you're on the bone broth.
Which has drawbacks.
Okay.
People in my life would say sometimes maybe I'm too decisive or I'm too impulsive or, you know, I can be an all or nothing. But I think it has served me well in terms of following my gut.
So let's talk about this because we had this passion through the lunchtime chats on Instagram that kind of evolved. And we were doing probably about, I don't know, a conversation a month, sometimes even more if there were things that were happening. Mm-hmm. And we were having a good time doing it. What did you see the strengths and the drawbacks of us actually making this a professional line of business for us?
I think the strengths were obvious to me. One, that we had this history of these conversations that we had been, right? The lunchtime chats mimicked conversations that we've had for over a decade.
Just naturally.
So, and we had always said, like, we wonder if people would be interested in this because we're coming at these issues from interest, like very similar social justice perspectives, but very different lived experiences.
Very true.
The challenges, I was very afraid. No, actually, you know, I'm going to say this and then I'm going to be like, Margo, you're full of shit. I think it's risky to go into business with your friend.
Mm, yeah.
And I had seen that go poorly for my mom before. And I didn't want to lose one of the most important relationships in my life. But then I knew that we wouldn't.
Yeah.
Because the way we started and how we like jumped into hard conversations right from the get-go.
Girl.
Right? Like, this isn't working for me. The way you communicate doesn't work for me. By the way, that came both ways. But it was mainly I was annoying her.
You were not.
No, see, I was.
But it's actually made us closer.
No, exactly. Like, and then me, like, being able to be like, I need your help with this.
Yes, absolutely. Or when you told me, you were like, I just don't feel like you want to do this anymore. And I was like, shit, I'm so stressed out and overwhelmed that instead of owning my shit, I'm making my friend think I don't want to be here. And that forced me to correct and own what I needed to do to not make you feel that way.
And I also feel like us being able to have hard conversations with some of our contractors too. Like we've talked about this, that we both feel misunderstood differently and we both see where each other is coming from and also the realities of just working with other people.
Is what it is.
It is what it is.
Yeah, yeah. So that's a strength and a challenge then.
Right. I think the other thing is that, well, I just really trust you. And I believe in you. And
same.
I know that you have good instincts, so you wouldn't do something that you didn't believe in.
And also, I think that we learned very quickly that we had different strengths that we brought to the table, and it didn't intimidate the other person.
No, I actually think our strengths and weaknesses complement each other really well. I also feel so deeply grateful. So what I was going to say is that while I was concerned about going into business with a friend, I also wouldn't want to do this alone.
That's a really good point. For me, just as someone who has so many types of being a media mogul.
Multi-hyphenate.
It's one of those things where I could not also imagine being able to hold space for something else. And if you were not so administratively sound, I would be pulling my hair out. Or I just would have given up a long time ago, to be honest with you.
But I think one of the challenges, unlike our guest, right? We are not offering a service that is immediately monetizable.
Amen.
And so that has been a challenge for us, because for us to keep this going, we need to make money. It costs money to do this, right? And it's our time, it's the space, it's production.
Yeah.
And so figuring out what that looks like, shout out to joining the private community. It helps us. Follow us on YouTube, like, follow, subscribe.
Absolutely. Helps us.
Helps us. Commenting on our posts helps us. And being really clear and getting more confident in asking for that is something that I'm working on.
Well, we're learning together and exploring things. And I think that is a product of the digital era. And what I've had to come to understand as what it means to be a solopreneur as older millennials who remembered a time without the internet, but can also welcome in the idea that streams of income can now come in because of the internet. So there ain't no prototype for this shit.
Well, and so, right, so we've often said you can't be what you can't see, but we can't see our likeness anywhere. And that's both really exciting and deeply unsettling.
That's actually such a good fucking point.
Right? So it's like we could be anything or nothing, and we are choosing to see this as something, but it's also risky.
We can be anything or nothing, and we are choosing to see this as something, Shondo. Okay, the title of our New York Times bestseller.
And also, we believe in the importance of talking about this phase of our life through a lens that people aren't talking about it. So it's not as though this is fluff to us. We wouldn't be. That's the other thing. I do think we are doing something that we believe is important.
Mm-hmm. And because we take our passion for life, our passion for social justice causes, our passion for wellness and the love of family and community very seriously. And all of those things have just come through the podcast. It's a conduit
right,
for that.
Service, mentoring, right, all of those things. And so I think one of the things I'm taking from this conversation with us, but also from Chef Jay, is if you can't see it, create it. Because no one's going to do it.
We are our own liberators. We are the ones that are going to create a life that we want to see. And if you have a passion and you have a love that you've always had, we are, I think, in one of the best times ever to find a way to monetize that. And let's be honest, maybe it's not your full-time job. Maybe it's your side hustle.
Can I also say something else? That not everything is monetizable.
Or has to be monetized to be
right. And so wonderful. That's another thing that I think I will just say from my own experiences, right? As someone who was not particularly on social media, I have a complicated relationship with social media. I don't think social media is great for our collective mental health. However, consistent with Chef Jay's advice, this is part of growing a business in the digital age. And so we are very active on social media because we're growing our business, as we should be. And I have gotten a lot of constructive feedback around social media, like, oh, I didn't know you liked social media so much, or like, why are you posting so much on social media? Or why aren't you posting other things on social media, but you're posting about this? And I'm like, this is my business.
My brand. People get that confused so often when you are your brand. Trust me, I have dealt with that for many, many years. They'll be like, well, why are you posting, but you didn't call me back? because I'm working. When you're working, do you call me? Why is that an expectation? But it's just kind of catching up with the expectations of living in a digital age.
Right. And I don't blame other people. It is like a learning curve for everyone else too. I just think it is this interesting thing where this is part of our business. This is something that we're leaning into. And there are boundaries around that as well. Not everything from our personal lives is on the internet.
But can I ask you a real question though? Because I feel like this is what I have lost. When you monetize your passion, how do you keep your hobby? Are there some times when you're just like, bitch, I don't want to talk to you no more. I've been talking to you for hours in the podcast.
So actually, I was going to say something else. I miss hanging out with you outside of the podcast.
Yes.
And I think we're both really busy people. So when we see, and we see each other in these very intense, and it makes sense given our lives, like, we're in and out in a day, maybe a night. But if we're doing an overnight, it's because we have a night event for the podcast. And so I miss just being able to hang out. But also, we wouldn't be able to hang out this much if it weren't for the podcast. So it's again this
duality.
It's both. So overall, I guess that would be a drawback, but it's definitely worth the cost. I don't know. That would be what I would say. What about you?
No, I totally feel that way. And I think that if I was to start, not the podcast, because I think we have great instincts and we're doing a great job with still fostering and growing our relationship. But for politics and fashion, what I wish I would have thought about before becoming a full-time content creator would have been your hobby is going to become your full-time job. How do you either explore other interests? Or how do you create a life that is going to incentivize greater work-life balance, if that's even a thing? Mm-hmm. Because when you've been doing something that you enjoy for so long, it's easy to just do it all the time.
I also, like, from an outside perspective, this is not my personal experience, but watching you, you're so good at being a content creator that I imagine it would be hard to try something new. Because there are not that many people who are as good as you. There are a lot of people who try to be online personal. You just are, and you're good. You have good instincts. You have really good style. You have really good aesthetics. You understand how to work a camera, both zooming in, zooming out, video, stills, what works. You understand algorithms. You understand how to interplay different systems. You are very skilled. So you have this niche that not many people have. But that doesn't mean you have to do it.
No, absolutely not. And I can pivot at any point, but I enjoy it and I love it. What I have yearned for is something outside of it, because I worked full-time and came home and like did my little blog posts. You know, I worked full-time and on the weekends I shot content. What happens when you're doing that now, Monday through Friday, in my case, 7 days a week? Where is the outlet? Where does that come from? So I would encourage everyone to think about your outlet early on. What is going to happen when you have monetized your passion?
Absolutely. And this idea that not every aspect of your life, if you have a digital footprint for your business, that doesn't mean that every aspect of your life has to have a digital footprint.
I love that.
You can, but it doesn't have to.
Absolutely. And I have learned to keep things for myself that belong just to me. But I want to hear from Chef Jay on this, Margot.
Me too.
So let's cut to Chef Jay and all of her advice around monetizing your passion.
This episode is sponsored by MM LaFleur. We are both wearing the same suit, orchid suit, styled differently, as I am 5'1" and Tashara is 6'1".
I actually am.
I know. I'm not lying. And this is part of their spring collection. It is so springy. It is so amazing. I literally crumpled this up in my suit.
Yeah.
I literally crumpled this up in my suitcase and pulled it out and put it on. And it is not wrinkly at all. It is very, very breathable and very comfortable.
And they make many pieces in this fabrication. And so if you are someone who travels a lot for work, for example, this is the type of suit that you need. Obviously, I preach about capsule wardrobes and interchangeability all the time. That's important for you as well, Margot. And so to have something like this that could be a great blazer with a pair of jeans.
Absolutely.
Or the slacks with a great white button down. and to wear it casual like I'm wearing it today with a pair of sneakers.
I'm also not wearing it casual. If you want to just take a look at my shoes. So yeah, one lucky Just Us listener or viewer will be able to win this. So MM is gonna do a online giveaway.
Absolutely, and we have received so much positive feedback every time we post this look, and so we know y'all are excited for it. Make sure you enter to win the giveaway. We will have all of the T's and C's down in the description box. Shout out to MM LaFleur.
Thanks, MM.
We have with us today Chef Jaleesa Arnold, who we affectionately call Chef J.
Chef J.
Welcome. Hey, girl. Hey. Now, let me just situate you for the podcast Justice League, that you were the one who just slayed it down at our live taping in D.C. at Eaton.
Yes, yes.
So if you attended that, you've had Chef J's delicious food. My favorite, she already knows, is what?
The shrimp deviled eggs.
Girl, do something strange for those. So thank you for being here with us today, because at the time when I was first meeting you, Chef J, I think kind of this transition from your passion to your career was fairly new.
I was transitioning. So I had always been running my catering business on the side since 2016, but after the pandemic in October 2021, I finally went on ahead and quit and took it full time.
Wow.
So I think one of the things that we are so interested in hearing from you, Chef J, is a little bit about your story and both kind of your professional trajectory up until you made the move, but what was the moment? How did you make that decision? Because that decision to take the leap is so bold and brave and scary for a lot of people. And a lot of people just want to see their likeness in other people and want to know how you made that decision.
Yeah, the decision definitely didn't come easy. It came with a lot of thought, a lot of prayer. And finally, you know, my clients were begging me to quit my full-time job because they wanted to use me full-time for different events. And so I finally went on ahead and stepped out there on faith and took my business full time. And it's the best decision I ever made.
What were you doing before?
Prior to catering, I was a social worker. I was a director of social service at a skilled nursing facility in Alexandria, Virginia. We did long-term care, short-term care, rehabilitation, and I assisted the patients with discharge planning. And we also helped critical complex patients, trach and ventilator patients, be able to transition back home to the community. So, yeah, that's what I did.
But it's interesting because I feel like you're still in the same profession. I know they call the field of social work like a helping profession. And it feels like as a chef, you're nourishing people and you're still kind of part of a community setting. That's how I see your role, at least.
Can I just say something also? I was going to say something totally different, actually, that it's very interesting that you came from a professional, we didn't know this, mm-mm, a professional space where you were working with survivors of trauma, mm-hmm, right? Anyone on a trach or event, if they've ever had a family member who's had that experience or a loved one, knows how intense and scary and medically complicated,
yes,
that is. You and I came from working professions exclusively working with survivors of trauma.
Absolutely.
And while there is a lot of likeness in kind of caring for people, like moving into a space where maybe you're not as confronted with trauma all the time.
Yeah. It's definitely a big shift. Being a social worker, you deal with people's issues. You are doing conflict resolution. You are doing critical thinking, trying to help them figure out the best and safest discharge plan for their situation. And so it requires a lot of counseling, a lot of support, a lot of therapy. With cooking, I kind of have shifted to, like you said, nourishing the person in a different way. Not so much therapy, support, counseling, but just through food, through their stomachs. So I'm feeding the community one belly at a time.
I love that. So you mentioned your clients were like begging you. So I love the idea of the fact that there was a demand.
Yeah, you being one of them.
Exactly. But what else did you have to consider? What went into you saying, okay, now is the time? I know it was the pandemic, but I would imagine you're married.
Yes.
There likely were other considerations. And how did you walk through those?
Well, at the time I was married, so I did have to consult with my husband at the time and make sure that financially it was the best time and that logistically, were we set up? Did I have the proper space to fulfill this dream? And all of that went into my decision. It definitely was very scary. I'm not going to lie. It was scary. But the good thing is I had already built up a decent clientele prior to leaving my full-time job. And I feel like that's one thing you have to consider when you are in a, you know, culinary space. You have to make sure you're going to have the consistent clientele. You just can't jump out there and say, hey.
Yeah, we've talked a lot about that, not related to cooking, but just this idea of quitting doesn't have to be all or nothing.
Yeah.
Right? That you can start nurturing your passions and turn a profit before you maybe make that full step.
Yeah, and that's what I call it. I call it like either building a side hustle and or buying yourself out of your full-time job through that side hustle, which it sounds like that was one of the things that you did.
Yes, yes, I did. I invested a lot during my time working to get my business up and running. Anyone that's going to enter the food space, you have to make sure you have the proper equipment to run your business, such as the professional chafing dishes. You have to have linen. You have to have things that are going to make your buffet stand out and have a really nice presentation. You also have to have the kitchen space that's certified and approved by the health department, which you cook and prepare your clients' food safely. So you have to have all that and take those things into consideration prior to making your decision if you're going into the culinary space.
What about just the confidence too? Because somebody right now is sitting at home saying, well, she's just probably a great chef and I couldn't do that. I'm not like her. Like, what would you have said to yourself before you took the leap, even before you even start cooking for family and friends outside of what you may have been doing before?
I would say you just have to trust the process, you know, because the skills, if they're there, the skills are going to do what's needed to be appealing to your market. So I already had good camera comfortability, I guess. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I wasn't afraid of the camera, and a big part of my content, I'm in front of a camera, I'm cooking. So a lot of the early videos, I also was doing social media at the same time or working full time. I would shoot content in the evening, even if I'm just cooking dinner for everyone, I'm shooting that. And that's content. And you have to be comfortable in front of the camera because now we live in a world that's content, content, content. And so that's one of the skills. Also, yes, I've been cooking since I was 8 years old, but you do have to have some type of training or some type of skills to sharpen what you do. And so I did graduate from my culinary incubator program through Flavors, which is the commercial kitchen that I work out of. And I received a certificate for completing that process. You just need skills to help you stay sharp as a chef.
Right, because I imagine it's one thing cooking dinner for your family. You mentioned before getting on air, right, that you cook for 500 people.
Yeah.
Those are very different skill sets.
Yes.
Just the equipment alone.
You got to be organized.
So the executive functioning, you should see my kitchen after I cook dinner. It's literally like a bomb went off. So I cannot even imagine cooking for more than five people. But you said something, and you had mentioned this to me before when we met at Eaton, that I think is really interesting and I imagine hard for some of our audience to hear. It certainly was hard for me as a new business owner to understand the connection between content and the mission of what you're trying to do. And can you talk a little bit more about how content plays into your mission, your business mission statement or growing your business?
Well, with the recent social media boom, back then when I first started, I think people were really just starting to tap into content. And you saw a lot of food creators emerging. I'm doing catering as a means to an end so that I can do what I really am passionate about, which is creating cooking content full time.
Oh, wow.
But of course, that does not pay the bills. So you still have to have the catering funding that dream. So I tell myself, sometimes you have to do what you don't really want to do to be able to do what you want to do. And so what I want to do is full-time food content shooting, being in front of the camera, showing people recipes step by step, really walking you through the process of cooking and inviting you into the kitchen with me.
Okay, so a Food Network, Magnolia, if you're watching, well, actually, we know you are watching. This is your next superstar right here, Chef Jay.
And I actually just launched my YouTube show. It's called Chefing It Up in the Kitchen with Chef Jay. So love you it. Guys can find me on YouTube.
We'll link it.
Yes. So please check me out and come invite. I'm inviting you into the kitchen with me to get your hands dirty and let's cook.
And see, and that's my thing too, because I talk all the time about the value of YouTube. So we could have a whole separate conversation about branding, YouTube, Instagram, TikTok, all the different things. But I want to go back to this idea of you've been cooking since you were 8 years old. You're a social worker, and then you monetize your passion to do this full time. And we're on the way to the major network TV show as well. But in between, what has it been like for you to turn your hobby into your job? How do you have balance?
Well, balance is important. You definitely have to take breaks. Actually, I'm just coming off of a little break because I had been working event after event after event. And sometimes you get tired, you get fatigued, your body hurts. You need to rest. So I would say making time for vacation is important. Also having certain key people in place to do certain tasks so that you are not trying to do everything. So of course, your accountant, your sous chefs. She does a lot of my grocery shopping. Shout out to sous chef Steph. It's a tongue twister, but I gotta get it right. Sous chef Steph.
Okay.
Yes, sous I have to give Steph. Her a shout out. She's also my aunt. And she is the backbone behind my business and how I got started, when I got started, and pushing me to where I am now.
We have someone like that who's here today. Roger.
Then you know how hard it is when you're trying to build a business. You really have to have someone that really believes in what you're doing and is willing to support you 100%. I've called her in the middle of the night and said, hey, I need this. And she was there.
Practically speaking, how long did it take for you to replicate your salary?
It took a year.
That's it?
Yeah.
That's amazing.
And I was shocked. I was just shocked. I'm still shocked of how much money I make doing catering and being a private chef. Like, the money is there if the skill is there.
Yeah.
The money amazing. Will come.
So there's something about abundance too, right? How do you adopt an abundance mindset, especially in this society just that tells us to go get a job.
And I also imagine that you have to have hard conversations with clients about money.
Yes.
Like, my skills are not free.
The price is the price. The price
if you ain't got no money. No. It was a song. I was actually singing that today. We cater to more of a luxury clientele. It's not to say we won't work with anyone, because obviously there are situations where maybe like a funeral, those are unexpected. They need catering. We've even volunteered and done the serving at those events for free because we understand that sometimes funds are hard to come by. And we want to be a pillar of the community and help out with events like that. But for the most part, we do try to appeal to a luxury clientele. So it's all in who you advertise to, of the type of clients that you attract. And so you don't have to try too hard to weed out the ones that don't have any money, because automatically when they come to your page and they go to your website and they have those conversations with you, you're doing the consultations, they get a feel that maybe this is outside of my budget and I should look somewhere else.
So this is good for us.
Mm-hmm. You've already set the expectations.
No, so we have struggled with this as a new business in knowing what we believe we should be paid and people not being willing to pay that.
And just being like steadfast in that expectation and not maneuvering. Of course, in your example, exceptions can be made. But I'm hearing her say,
the price is the price.
The price is the price. Because if you continue to negotiate and nickel and dime, you're not going to get anywhere.
And you're going to feel resentful.
Yes, because you've now done an event that you have not been adequately compensated for, and you're not going to put forth your best. The client is going to be upset. So don't even take it on.
Put yourself in that position.
Don't put yourself in that position. Just say, oh, well, I'm going to pass on this one, but another opportunity will come. And think about it. If you're consuming yourself with so many events where you're not really being paid what you want, that's also taking up time and space for that big fish that could be coming along. But you're already booked doing a dinner for someone that's only trying
to pay. We're swimming with the little fish. We need to swim with the big fish.
You guys will get there. You're there. You're on your way. You're on the road. Like, I see you guys. I've seen Tashira personally. She's been a client of mine for some years now, supported Soulful Catering. Mm-hmm. Margo, you've had my food recently. Mm-hmm. And I just appreciate the support. And I couldn't do what I'm doing now without that support. Like, every time I would see Tashira, she'd be like, you quit your job yet, Chef
Jay? Like, because I knew where it was headed. And also, there's this other part about you being unapologetic about promotion. I think a lot of times when we talk about monetizing our passion, what we're missing is just that push of saying, I am doing something that is worth being compensated for. And I remember my business coach telling me this. She said, everybody you know wants to buy something from you, or they know someone who does.
Yeah.
So you've got to be bold about that. And also, going back to this idea, you sound like you have an abundance mindset.
Yes. Yes, I do. And you have to think that way in business, because we put a lot of time and labor into what we do. There are days where my back is hurting because I've carried so many groceries and lifting things, loading our catering van, unloading, like, you're tired. And at the end of the day, when you think about it, you're like, was this really worth it? Did I receive enough compensation for this job to not only satisfy my personal financial goals, but to take care of my team? That's how you have to think. When you think abundance, you think about expansion. And can you take care of those people who have been riding with you from?
Come on, expansion. Mm-hmm. Come on, expansion. Speaking of which, you didn't have a team.
No, it was just me, myself, and I.
Talk to us about this trajectory to a team.
Okay, so
guys,
okay.
I feel like I have to take some notes. I just need to be right.
Listen, Chef Jay is preaching today. Yes, because this is what success looks like in a real way. And I feel like our society places certain individuals, you know, on this pedestal. But no, tell me what the person who is my neighbor is doing to be happy and successful. Make it realistic for me. Okay, Margo has her notebook, and we are going to get clear on this today. I feel like you're about to be broken free of some things. Okay, thank you. Your path to a team, Chef Jay.
Well, I started out by myself, and I would solicit help of my family first, and then friends. That's really who started in my business in the beginning. I had to lean on until I got to where I am now. And I did. I paid my family. I paid my friends just to come and help me, as long as they had the proper certifications and were willing to take the food handlers class. We always put safety first in cooking. And I really leaned on my family and friends in the beginning. But once I began to grow and I began to attract larger events, more clientele, I was able to start hiring staff. And I prayed about it. I said, God, send me the people that truly support Soulful Catering and want to be here, whether they were getting paid or not. I want those kind of people. And one by one, I would be doing catering events. And I met all my staff who work with me now at catering events. Like, it was something weird. Like, they just started gravitating towards me and asking me questions. They're like, oh, is this your business? Oh, I love cooking. I have a passion. Are you hiring? And then those questions would come up. So all of my staff who work with me now, I met them at events, or either they've reached out to me personally because they have a passion for this. This is something they would do even if they weren't getting paid. Those are the kind of people that you want to be surrounded by. Now, of course, I pay them and I pay them well.
Yeah.
But that is thanks to my great clients who support Soulful Catering so we can support our team.
One of the things that I've been thinking a lot more about lately is like the process of funding and receiving capital to run your business, and how sometimes I think, especially as women and BIPOC-owned businesses, we don't always solicit capital or have access to it, let's just be honest. Have you flirted with that? Do you currently have it? Or have you just been able to sustain yourself with your client having a steady flow of clientele?
Steady flow of clientele. Also, my own capital I've built over the years. and through grants. There are certain grants.
Oh, yes.
That's amazing.
We learned about some of those through, shout out to Maya Camille, Justice of the Pies, Chicago.
There are grants out there to support your business. You just have to search for them and shoot your shot.
What is kind of the mantra or the mission that you live by that's made a difference in your life?
I would say just treat people how you want to be treated. And the reason why I say that is because that spans so far across when you're doing business, whether you're interacting with a client, a potential client, a partner, a potential other business that you want to network with. If you build those relationships correctly and you just treat people with respect and how you want to be treated, it circles back and it comes back to your business.
Thank you so much, Chef Jay, for being with us today.
Welcome. Thank you, Chef Jay. It's so good to see you.
Yes. Everybody, make sure if you were in the DMV area, or actually, do you travel, Chef Jay?
Yes, I do travel.
Okay, so we're worldwide. Make sure you book Chef Jay. Her information will be down in the description box. And also make sure you are subscribed to her YouTube channel.
Yes.
We will see you soon.
All right, thank you.
I'm so inspired.
You were like, it was like you were in church, like taking notes.
Well, I think we needed that.
Period. I mean, thinking about what we said before, Chef Jay, and just what it has been like for us to grow this business and to fight through the imposter syndrome and how we welcome in abundance. She is so clear.
She is unapologetically clear that she is a luxury caterer who has her terms and she can donate her time when it's appropriate.
And the price is the price.
The price is the price. And you and I have been like wringing our hands like, well, this is our nonprofit rate and this is our corporate rate. And, oh, you want this? And no, this is the price.
Yeah, we'll throw in a kidney, but you need a pinky toe. Like, no, there's some things we're just not going to negotiate around, especially because this is something that we are passionate about.
And if we want it to be sustainable, which we do, we need to get paid just like you guys get paid for your jobs.
Well, and I'm also thinking about like what it requires to be an expert. Chef Jay started cooking when she was 8. I'm imagining she's at a big age now.
I think she's a little younger than us.
But still, I'm talking about decades.
For sure.
Every single thing we've done in life has brought us to this moment. And so what may be a hour-long chat for a client really took us decades of expertise to be able to speak for that hour. And that is what they are paying for, not the hour. And I have to remind myself of that.
Yes. And we have high skills in interviewing and counseling and public speaking.
That part. So thank you, Chef Jay, for reminding us of that. And what I really hope is that for our viewers and for our listeners, it also resonated with them. And we don't want to give a Pollyanna perspective. I think we have provided some balance today. Everything will not be perfect.
No. And I think that I hope it's helpful for our listeners and viewers to know that we struggle too.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And I imagine if people are listening and supporting us, they would want us to feel good about the product we're creating, just like we want them to feel good about their passion and monetizing it.
Yes. And so we encourage you to join our private community. We have a lot of these conversations about entrepreneurship, abundance, building your confidence, et cetera, at a big age. We have Justice merch as well. So drop down and grab some of that. Join us at our next live events in a city near you, and we will see you all next time. Thanks for listening to Justice. We hope you enjoyed this episode. If you'd like to learn more about our podcast, be sure to check us out on our website at justicepodcast.com. You can also reach out to us there if you want to be featured on the show or if you have a business or a product that you think would be a good fit for our audience. Thanks again for listening.